Hi, everybody. My name's Polly, and I'm an alcoholic. By God's grace, in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink since April the 11th of 1977, and for that, I am eternally grateful. And thanks. I have a home group, and that home group is Monday Night Seal Beach Speakers Group. And I have a sponsor, Dottie H., and she has a sponsor. And those are the things that I feel like that I need in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous to be a member in good standing. And I'm really grateful for that. This has been a fabulous weekend, absolutely fabulous. And I want to start by thanking Lee, because he called me about a year ago or so and invited me to come to this conference. And I've been really excited that I'm going to get to come ever since. And I have a lady I sponsor in Jacksonville, so I was really excited that I was going to get to see Jill, and she was going to drive down and all of that good stuff. And then about 2 weeks ago, I got this call from Amanda, and she said, left me a phone number and said she'd moved to Jacksonville. And I said, oh, my God, she's in Jacksonville. So then I commenced to try to get a hold of her. And so finally did yesterday morning at about 7:15, she answered the phone. I had Jill and Jerry doing a search on the internet for her. And come to find out, she didn't have an answering machine. And I said, Amanda, nobody in AA doesn't have an answering machine. So yesterday we went to Kmart and bought one. And when I got here, I didn't get here till Thursday night at about 11 o'clock. And when I got here, here was two of the cutest women you have ever seen in your life. And it was Peggy and Jean. And they had this sign up, you know. And then we start walking, and they're going, you're not going to believe this. And I said, well, what happened? She said, well, we came out here at 11 o'clock this morning. And she said, they were running around, the plane empties, you're not on it, we don't know what's going on. We go up to the desk, and the guy's looking for you, and he's scratching his head, and then they say, ma'am, this lady is not coming in till 11 p.m. So here they were back again, and Peggy has just been wonderful, and because she was working the tape table with Lee, she turned me over to Jean, and Jean has just been absolutely precious. I have felt so spoiled and so special, and she's just looked after me, and she's a guest herself because she's from Arkansas. So it's been wonderful, and what a treasure. And I'd like to thank you for the basket that I got. And it's wonderful to have been a part of your conference. What also is really a privilege is that, in my opinion, I feel like the Florida State is very blessed because I get to go and hear a lot of speakers. Plus, I'm from Southern California, so I get to hear a lot of speakers. My Monday night Seal Beach speakers meeting we have a conference speaker every Monday night. And we're real spoiled, very, very spoiled that we get that every Monday night. But as far as I'm concerned, at this convention this weekend, you have had the finest speakers and the finest examples of Alcoholics Anonymous I know in this country. These are fine people. And because I know a little bit about the people that have been here this weekend, they're all people who are into service, who are into sponsorship, and who are into the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think that that's been clear all weekend. I mean, we've heard about the steps, the steps, the steps, and that's the program. The steps are the program. And I'm just privileged to have been a part of this panel of speakers. I feel so honored that it's a tad bit, I'll just be honest, it's a tad bit intimidating to be the last speaker when you have just been preceded by the people who have gone before you. So it's truly an honor, and I thank you so much for the opportunity to be a part of your convention. As we've heard this weekend, the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that I should share in a general way what it used to be like, what happened, and what I'm trying to be like today, and I'm going to do that in a general way. If you're new today, maybe you can't identify with 22 years of sobriety. Maybe that just seems like that's a lot of sobriety if you're 90 days. One of the things that has been such an honor to be at this conference is to see all the people with so much sobriety. Because, you see, when you're 22 years of sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's wonderful to know that people with 30, 35 years, 40, 45, 50, 51 years of sobriety are still coming to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and are still doing the deal. Now, I go to one of those meetings in Southern California, and I will assure you that there isn't anybody in my group that's impressed with my 22 years of sobriety. Because I'm sort of a newcomer in our group. So it's wonderful, and I think that's the thing. I need that. I need to have someone to go to, and I'm so grateful that I come from an area where there's so many old-timers or long-timers. And I was told if you want to be an old-timer or a long-timer, just don't drink and just don't die, and you'll get to do that. And I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that the best I can, one day at a time. I want to let you know that I am living, breathing proof that you can come to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and not come from the disease of alcoholism. I have got nobody to blame for this. I come from parents who did not drink. And the only thing that we can figure out is that my grandfather, if you know, they say shake an alcoholic's family tree and an alcoholic will fall out. Well, it could have possibly been my grandfather. I don't ever remember him drinking like I drank, but he was the only one in our family who drank. My parents did not drink. However, my mother had been raised by a very cruel stepmother, and she was very abused. And my father had come from abject poverty. So I don't know if their low self-worth had anything to do with my low self-worth and all of that. And I'm just kind of like all of the speakers who have spoke before me, and I believe this with all my heart. So if I knew, what difference would it make? I'm still alcoholic, and I still have a solution, and I still have a way out. I have a way to live this program. Now, today, I absolutely love my life. I love my life so much. I love sobriety. I love my life. And because of that, I am more active in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous than I have ever been. I sponsor more people than I have ever sponsored, and I'm into more service than I've ever been into. And that's very simple. Because today, I have so much more to lose. And I love what I have, and I don't want to lose that. And I'm so grateful to what this program has given me. I grew up in this home where I was very, very loved. I do not know anything about any kind of abuse. In fact, I've heard, Franny and I were talking about this book that we have read that's by Clarence Snyder. And at the very front of the book, he says there's two things that possibly could contribute to the disease of alcoholism, and that is someone who hasn't been loved enough or someone who's been loved too much. And I'm the one who's been loved too much. I was absolutely loved and adored by my parents. I'm an only child, and they just absolutely gave me everything they had. They did not have money, but they had loads and loads of love. But I'm here to tell you that I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I could have sworn to you that nobody loved me. That is how I felt inside. Now, when I was sitting in treatment and I was listening to these horrific stories that all these people were telling, I could sit there and say, oh my God, I know why you're an alcoholic, but why am I an alcoholic? Because none of that stuff ever happened to me. And it wasn't until I became a student of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that I knew what was wrong with me. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that I am suffering from a spiritual malady. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that I have been cut off from the sunshine of the Spirit. And today I know that the problem with me was that I was spiritually ill. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that if I am suffering from a spiritual malady, nothing is enough. You cannot love me enough. You cannot give me enough. You cannot do enough. There simply is not enough for a person like me. You don't have enough to give me because I came to you with a hole in my soul. And there was absolutely no way that that could be filled up with a human power. And I didn't know that. All I knew was, is I had these feelings, just like you've heard from everybody this weekend. I had these feelings of I'll never be enough. I'm never gonna have enough. God's not gonna love me enough. There simply was never enough. And I always had these feelings of being so less than. Yet here I had all this stuff, but inside of me, I could not feel that. So I believe I hear some people talk about the spiritual side of AA. I don't even know about that. But for me, I have a spiritual illness that is described to me in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that the only solution is spiritual recovery. That I find a God of my understanding and that I become of maximum service to that God and others. And if I will do that through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I will be set free from a disease that is hopeless of mind and body. And today, I'm really grateful that I know, without a shadow of a doubt, that I am God's kid and that God loves me. And you know what's really neat is I always hated being an only child. I hated that because, you know, people are always teasing you because you're an only child. So I would tell these tales about all these siblings that had died so that they'd think I had, you know, all these brothers and sisters. But today, I understand, because I believe God, as I understand Him, loves me as if I were His only child. And that He loves each and every one of us as if we were His only children. And for that, I'm so grateful. Now, one of the things that we've heard a lot this weekend, and that I'm really grateful, is that we've laughed. I mean, you come into these rooms and all of this stuff that we've done and all these things that have happened to us, pretty soon they become laughable. We start laughing and we get a sense of humor about it. Well, I have a higher power that has a dynamite sense of humor, and I want to share that with you. My name is Polly. It is not a nickname. That is my name. And I am not a Pauline or a Paula. So I'm here to tell you, if your name is Polly and you're a little girl, you're going to be teased a lot. And it's going to be things like Polly wants a cracker, Polly Wally Doodle all the day, And I'm sure that none of you are sensitive, but I am really sensitive. And I don't like to be laughed at, and I don't like to be teased. But what I've learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is there's just no negatives in God's world. It's just my perception that's negative. Everything has a positive result, even though it appears at the time to be the very worst thing that could happen to me. Today, I love having the name Polly, because I can walk into rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous when there's 2,200 people, and when somebody says Polly, I'm pretty sure they're talking to me. Because there's just not very many Pollys in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I didn't know that I was an alcoholic. I knew that I was a drunk, and I knew that I was a lush. And I used to drive down the freeways in Dallas, Texas, and I used to pray to God to have heart disease or cancer or something, because I knew that I was dying, and I just wanted to die of something respectable. And today I know that the disease of alcoholism is my greatest gift, because if I didn't have the disease of alcoholism, I wouldn't qualify for the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And everything I am or hope to be, I owe to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thanks. Almost 19 years ago, I married Dave. Dave's last name is Pistol. My name is now Polly Pistol. I will assure you, you cannot walk around on planet Earth with a name like Polly Pistol and not learn to lighten up. So, God has a fabulous sense of humor. When I was 18 years old, I married an Air Force officer. And I thought I had just found my knight in shining armor. And I tell you, at 59 years old, a man in uniform will still turn my head. And I just knew I had found my knight in shining armor, and we were going to sail off into the sunset and live happily ever after. Well, I'd married a SAC pilot. And this man was going to be gone, and he was going to be gone for years at a time, and I was going to have to learn to be responsible for myself. Well, you know, in the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and through the fourth and fifth inventory, I've learned a lot about myself and things I really didn't like at all. And one of them is that I have never, ever wanted to be responsible for myself. I have never wanted to be responsible for who I am. I have never wanted to be responsible for my happiness. I am a person who has had total and complete dependence upon other people. What you think of me, what you can do for me, whatever it is about me. And I did not know that until I had done an inventory in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. But here I was, and I've always... You know, I'm one of these people in Texas. I love Blanche's description. I'm born and raised in Texas. And she says that's a state of mind. So, at any rate, here I was. And in Texas, when you pout and have self-pity and all that stuff, we call it puffing up. You ever seen that? Just kind of puff up. And people will say, what's wrong? Nothing. But then it becomes your responsibility to find out what's wrong with me. And then it becomes your responsibility to fix it. And if you don't, you don't love me. And I love what Clancy says. Clancy says that we're people who have to be treated special just to feel average. And if you don't treat us special, then we feel rejected. And I understood that. And here I was now. This man is going to be gone. Now, the other thing is I'm this 18-year-old girl, and my perception, and I don't know if Lee's going to have Clancy's tape, Alcoholism, a Disease of Perception. He's nodding his head that he does. But if you have never heard Clancy's tape, Alcoholism, a Disease of Perception, I highly encourage you to get that tape, because Clancy talks about the disease of perception. You see, I have this head. You know, Franny says we're just off. And I believe that, Franny. We're off. I mean, you're not going to ever get me on. This is the kind of head I have. And today I know that alcohol is but a symptom of the disease of alcoholism. But you see, I have this kind of head. That you give me this set of information, it goes in my head, it takes a walk around, and what comes out doesn't even resemble what went in. I have this disease of perception. I don't see things the way they really are. My perception of reality is distorted. And when I heard that tape of Clancy's about 13 or 14 years ago, it was like, oh my God, that's it. And I'm really grateful for it, because you see, I don't care how long I sit in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I need to suit up and show up for this program. I need to have my seat in my home group. I need to have a sponsor, and I need to be into those steps every single day of my life, or I am going to start to relapse in my thinking, and before long, I'm going to be thinking, drinking. And I know that for me. I know that that's the kind of head I have. I was raised Southern Baptist, and you know, I heard things in that church nobody else heard. My mother still goes to that church, and my mother never heard that God's going to get you, that you're going to go to hell and burn for the rest of your life. My mother never got the hopeless, helpless feeling that I'll never, ever be enough for God. She heard God loves her. I heard, if you don't do these things, if you've fought it, you've done it, and God's going to get you. And you know what? I was an alcoholic in the making, and I fought a lot. And I just knew that God was going to get me. And those were that was my thinking. And so here I am, 18 years old. The other thing is I'm uneducated. Now, I'm still uneducated. So it's probably not such a big deal, or I would have gone and done something about it. But I am still uneducated. So I go, and here's all these women that are other officers' wives, and I am so totally intimidated and feel so inadequate, because these women are dressed with their gloves and their hats just so. They sit down and they have the right dinner parties. They have the right cocktail conversation, and they have all this stuff, and I feel like this total boob. I'm just not going to be able to communicate. I'm going to open my mouth, and they're really going to find out how stupid I am. And I was just terrified. And somebody handed me a drink. And it didn't seem like a big deal. And I took a drink of alcohol. I don't remember having that feeling that a lot of people talk about. You know, it went down, it went out into the end of my fingers, and all of a sudden, I'm Rita Hayworth. I don't remember that. My husband said it went down, and he got to 6'4", and all his freckles fell off. And I don't remember that happening for me. When I picked up the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the answers came to me, what alcohol did for me, in the doctor's opinion. And it said, it gave me that feeling of ease and comfort. I just felt like when I took a drink of alcohol, I just wasn't full of all that anxiety and that fear, and what are they going to think, and what are they going to think of me, and how am I going to carry on a conversation. And I don't know if you guys have a head that just won't shut up, but you should have heard my head. Oh, my God, they're going to find out that you're this little kid that doesn't have any sense, and da-da-da-da, and that you're stupid, and you should have never married an Air Force officer, you can never do this, and I mean just on and on and on and on. And if I would take a drink of alcohol, I could take that drink of alcohol and I could sit there and at least I wouldn't be so full of fear. And when I picked up the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and it talks about the disease of alcoholism and we're driven by 100 forms of fear, I understood because I was absolutely terrified of my own shadow. I was afraid of everything. And I'm so grateful to this program because you have given me a set of steps that I can walk through fear. That doesn't mean to say that I'm not afraid, but you've been able to give me the tools in which to walk through those fears. Now, I don't remember anything spectacular happening other than just having those fears and taking a drink occasionally, and mostly when I went out just so that I could socialize in some sort of way. In 1962, we were stationed in a place called Loring Air Force Base, Maine. And if you've never been, you don't need to go. And I had these two little boys, and it was 50 below zero outside. I had no tools in which to be a parent. I absolutely did not know what to do with these little boys. I could not send them out to play because it was too cold. And these two little boys were driving me crazy. I was having a nervous breakdown every 20 minutes. And I went to an Air Force doctor, and he said, take these. And like Franny says, I make no apologies. Drugs are part of my story. And what I did was, is that I went to an Air Force doctor, and he said, take these. And from 1962 until 1977, when I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I drank alcohol, and I took Librium and Valium and Seconal and Nemutol. And I'm here to tell you, if you take those kind of drugs and you drink alcohol, you are not an active alcoholic. I'm one of these alcoholics who did my dying on my living room sofa. I just laid there and watched soap operas and listened to Joan Baez sing the blues. I don't tell any drunk stories. There's not any drunk stories to tell. I just laid there. Slept through it, and so would you. But I want to tell you what, I think there's a chapter in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that sometimes we forget to read, or we forget to pay any credence to, or not much is ever said about that chapter. And that's called the Family Afterwards. Because, you see, alcoholism devastates families. It absolutely devastates families. And anybody who lives with a practicing alcoholic is affected by the disease of alcoholism. And I believe that children who are raised in an alcoholic home are traumatized by the disease of alcoholism. Now, I have a son who's sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And his story is very different from my story. He doesn't make funny jokes about his mom being passed out on the sofa. Because, you see, James talks about the feelings of a little boy. And he talks about that little boy walking back and forth in front of that sofa, gripped with such terror because his mother's passed out. But he doesn't know that his mother's passed out. He's walking back and forth in front of that sofa, certain that his mother is dead and his father is gone. And that's the disease of alcoholism. You see, some of the things we take those inventory steps when we come to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if we have good sponsorship and we're led in the right direction, we get to learn some things, and as the book says, we get to swallow some big chunks of ourselves. And one of the things that I was, when I was doing my inventory, I had a wonderful AA sponsor, and Frank is in the big meeting in the sky. In fact, Frank got sober in Long Beach, and Frank had been a Monsignor priest, and he had moved to Texas and had married a Taiwanian woman and had left the priesthood. And, you know, he was the perfect, perfect sponsor for me because I had a lot of stuff that I had to get through as far as what I had to unlearn in order to pick up a higher power that I have today. And when I was given that inventory, Frank looked at me and he says, "Polly, you need to go home and you need to look yourself straight in the mirror and you need to say, I am a child abuser." You see, today, they don't let people like me have children. People like me who have little children, those children are removed from that home because that home presents a danger to those children. Because you see, my children are the product of physical abuse, emotional abuse, spiritual abuse, and most of all, blatant neglect. I have a 6-year-old grandson who has never had to fix a meal for himself. I had little boys who got themselves up for school, who fixed their breakfast, who made their lunches, who cooked their dinner because their mother was incapable of caring for them. And what that does to a little child is it sends a message of you are of no value. They don't understand that their mother is sick. And my AA sponsor said to me, "You will go to those boys and you will make amends. And you will tell those boys how sorry you are that you are a child abuser. And you will sit there and you will let them tell you what it was like to have a mother like you. And the only thing that you get to say is, I'm sorry that happened to you." And I promise you that it will be okay. And I cannot even begin to tell you today the relationship that I have with those two boys. It is beyond my greatest expectation. And I could have sworn to you that when Frank gave me that instruction, that was bad, bad instruction. This will not work. And you see, because of this program, and because I was able to let my children own their pain and let them know that, you know, so many times we say, "Oh, that didn't really happen," you know, and we just brush it away. And then they think, "God, am I crazy? Did this not happen?" And by doing so, I was able to honor my children. And I am very grateful. I'd just like to tell you the things that got me into treatment. I'm one of these people, after I got into treatment, after I got into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought, "Oh, God, I don't even sober up right." Because, you know, where I get sober, they call treatment a $10,000 big book and, you know, all this stuff. And I'm thinking, "Oh, God, I can't do anything right." But at any rate, I ended up having a car wreck in Dallas, Texas. And I was brought into a treatment center for the first time. And this was a county detox. I will assure you this was no fancy jitter joint. And I was brought into this treatment center. And what we were done is we were taken to a lot of AA meetings. And I loved AA. I loved the laughter. I loved the camaraderie. For the first time in my life, I didn't feel so inadequate. All of a sudden, I was sitting back there feeling a little superior. And listening to all these bad stories and thinking, "Well, that didn't happen to me. And that didn't happen to me." Because, you see, I didn't have any drunk driving. And I should have had a drunk driving when I got put in there because I had totaled an automobile in Irving, Texas. But instead, I got taken to the Irving police station. And, you know, you get to see that look on the non-alcoholic's face that just doesn't understand why we do the things we do. And that man looked at my husband, and he says, "Why don't you just take her home and sober her up?" But you see, I didn't get a drunk driving. I didn't have to go to jail. And all of a sudden, I'm thinking, well, people like me don't become alcoholic. And I love what my husband says. He talks about, Dr. Thibault says that there's two characteristics found in every alcoholic: grandiosity and defiant individuality. And he says, and Dave says, only an alcoholic can lay in the gutter feeling superior to those looking down on him. And here I was, all of a sudden, superior. Well, while I was in this little county detox, I had what we call in Texas a jitterhouse romance. You know, where sick falls in love with sick and you walk off into happy destiny? Well, we walked off into happy destiny for 58 days. And I was brought back into that treatment center more dead than alive. And I had been 12-stepped by Frank, and I had been brought back into that treatment center. And I had been beaten up in numerous and sundry other things. And I had reached that place in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that talks about pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Because now I knew what the problem was. The problem was sobriety. And I love, said last night, I love when Clancy talks about it. Because I knew that alcohol was the only thing that just allowed me to be able to communicate with you. Because if I didn't have alcohol, I was entirely too inadequate. And what am I going to do? Now how am I going to live with the kind of daughter I've become and the kind of mother I've become and the kind of wife I've become? And I think women, when they come into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, they hate what they've become. And I knew that there was no way that I could live with that. And I knew that I could not live inside my own skin sober. And when that 7-day detox was up, I left that treatment center, and I got a bottle of scotch, and I got a bottle of Valium, and I checked into a motel. Now, I don't believe that there's anybody in this room that doesn't have an angel in your life. And some people call it an Eskimo. Today, I choose to call it an angel. That's someone who leads us to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it just happened to be a lady that I worked with. And she knew nothing about the disease of alcoholism, but she loved me. And she said that day that something came over her. And today I know that that something was God working in my life through her. And she drove around until she found my car parked outside this motel. And I hadn't shut the door all the way, and she pushed it open, and she found me laying there. And on April the 8th of 1977, I was pronounced dead on arrival in a hospital in Bedford, Texas. Now, needless to say, that didn't take, because I'm standing here this morning. But I need to tell you about my miracle. Father Leo says that we all have a moment. We all have that moment of clarity. Well, you see, I don't remember a moment. I don't remember a moment. But I know what my moment was. My moment was a moment of grace. My moment was a God intervention. Because, you see, I didn't have any want to come to treatment. I didn't have any want to be sober. I didn't have any want to. But that moment of grace, when I was intervened on, my life was saved, breath was breathed back into me, and I was court committed to treatment by a Fort Worth judge. In 1977, the state of Texas did not take kindly to people who tried to commit suicide, and I was court committed to treatment. And I am so grateful for my moment of grace. And if you look up grace in Webster's Dictionary, it's a gift unearned. I did not ask for that gift. That gift was given to me. And I was taken to that hospital.
and I was committed to that hospital. And for that, I am eternally grateful. And that was on April the 11th of 1977. And by God's grace in this program, I haven't had a drink since. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about great events will come to pass. That's the great fact for us all. And I'd like to take the time that I have left and share with you my great events that have come to pass. Because today, my life is full of great events. Now, if you think I'm going to get up here and tell you one of these rags-to-riches story, that's not what I've got to share with you today. Because if that's where I was going to share, then I'd be sharing with you a riches-to-rags story. What I'm going to share with you is the things and the gifts that I have gotten from this program that are beyond my greatest expectation. When I was 3 years sober, let me just start by when I left treatment. I started going to this group, and Frank became my sponsor, and he would just tell me, you get busy in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you don't have but 30 minutes more sobriety than that other alcoholic, you go share that 30 minutes. And I was taught to get into service. I was told to go to book studies and step studies. And when you're in Texas, you give your sobriety date. I don't care what kind of little meeting you're going to. It doesn't mean it's a speaker's meeting. As they go around the room, they give their sobriety date. And they want to know if you've got a home group, and they want to know if you've got a sponsor. And if you don't have one, they will assign you one immediately. And that's the kind of sobriety I have. And we had these old, these old rednecks in Texas. You know what they look like, these old guys that got, bib overalls on, and they got a straw hat, or they got one of those bib hats, and they're sitting back there with their arms folded, and they got the chair leaning against the wall. You've seen those. And somebody comes in there whining, and they're going to say something like, well, I lost my job today, my house burned down, my husband left, and my child fell off the roof. And that old guy's going to stand back there and say, well, it looks to me like God gave you about 6 ways to grow today and you blew them all. And I'm grateful that I had that. I'm really grateful that I had that kind of direction when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and that kind of love. And I was ever mindful of the things that I needed to do in AA. And for that, I am eternally grateful. And I was always in a step study. I was always in a book study. And to me, it was very, very clear to me from the very start that you can be a doer in Alcoholics Anonymous, and this fellowship is wonderful. And service and fellowship are part of this triangle. But don't ever forget what the base of it is. And that's the 12 steps and the 12 traditions and the 12 concepts of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm so grateful that that was given to me in early sobriety. At 3 years of sobriety, I divorced. When I divorced, I had been married to this man for 22 years. And I'm here to tell you that the problem in that marriage was me. That man loved me and cherished me until the day I left. And I could not receive that love because, you see, I still hadn't had that spiritual awakening. Something was missing. And that man had cared for me in every way possible. That man died last August, and he was the father of my children, and he was a good man in every way. And I want you to know, thanks to this program, he and I, we were okay. We had been good parents after I got sober to those boys. And we were good grandparents to the grandchildren that we had. And I'm so glad for this program because there were no regrets. And just about 3 months ago, his wife came to visit my son in California, And she came to my house for dinner. And her and I got to sit and cry because we had loved the same man. And I don't know where else that happens except in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, that you can have that kind of understanding. And we get to have the opportunity to have those kind of healings. When I was 3 years sober, I married another member of this fellowship. And I'd known Dave since I was 6 months sober. And Dave and I had been friends. There had been no hanky-panky between Dave and I. We had been AA buddies. In fact, we often say if we'd have known we were going to get married, we'd have never told each other the things we told each other. And so, and Dave has been the person who has taught me more about love. In the Bhagavad Gita, it says to love another person totally, you get to see God. And Dave has loved me so totally, unconditionally. He loved me. You know, there's some of us that hit bottoms in this program that are as devastating as the bottoms we hit behind alcohol and drugs. And I had hit some bottoms in this program, and it was behind relationships and sex. You see, I didn't do any of it drinking. I did all of it sober. And what I did is I brought so much shame to myself. Because, you see, I was so desperate. I was just so desperate for you to love me. I just wanted to be loved. And I just looked for love in all the wrong places. Because, you see, I was trying to get you to love. I just knew if you'd love me enough, I'd be okay. And what happened was, is Dave knew all about that. He knew totally all about me. And he loved me anyway. And what he told me was, when he asked me to marry him, he says, Polly, you need to get something straight. I don't want to have an affair with you. I want to marry you. And you see, things like that aren't supposed to happen to women like me. And I'm here to tell you that on October the 27th, Dave and I'll be married 19 years. And I love this man today more than I loved him 19 years ago. And I was sharing with a friend of mine who's here also from Tennessee, and I was telling her that Dave and I are polar opposites. I don't know how this kind of thing happens, but, you know, here this person is so intimidated because I have no education and all this stuff, and I'm married to a computer scientist. And Dave is this little Mensa brainchild. And then here, I am, you know. And Dave is one of these kind of people that likes to throw a 40-pound pack on his back, and he likes to walk around on top of mountains, and he likes to throw ropes up on rocks and climb up them. And I don't do those things. I don't do that thing in the woods, and, you know, I don't do that. And I don't climb rocks because it'll scrape up my fingernails and my knees, I just don't do those things. But Dave and I share something that's of vital importance, and that we're both absolutely passionate about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And Dave and I have learned to let each other go. You go be the very best Dave you can be, and I'll go be the very best Polly I can be. And it hadn't always been that way. Because, you see, I'm a person all my life that has been plagued with insecurities. And I've had to deal with a lot of jealousy. And I'm here to tell you, I sponsor the most gorgeous women in Alcoholics Anonymous. And all these women are younger than me, and they're all thinner than me, and they're absolutely drop-dead gorgeous. And somehow or another, the younger and the drop-dead gorgeous doesn't bother me as much as the thinner.
And they love Dave, and Dave adores them. And for a lot of years in this program, I had a lot of problems with that. And today I know that if those feelings, those icky, awful feelings of jealousy, the rotting of the soul, come over me, I know that the only relationship I need to take a look at is my relationship with God. Because that's the only one out of order. Because when God and I are okay, then I am so happy that you have the things you have. And I am so happy that those women have that relationship with my husband. And I'm not envious of you, and I'm not jealous. I am so happy you have the things you have. And I'm really glad that I understand that today, that I don't have to look outside for what's going on with you. See, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that most of my problems are of my own making. I'm the problem. And in the 12 and 12 and chapter in the 10th step, it says that it is a spiritual axiom. If anything disturbs me, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with me. So I know that I need to look anywhere else but within myself. So if I've got an icky feeling, it's not about you. A few years ago, Dave and I have had a little financial problem, and things are really good today. I mean, it's never going to be like it was, I don't think, but if it isn't, it doesn't matter. And Dave and I were what you might call kind of high profile in AA, and he ended up losing his job, and a lot of things started to come down on us. And if you don't find a job pretty soon, our whole neighborhood was up for sale, because that's when aerospace took a dive in California. And it looked like, gosh, if he doesn't get a job pretty soon, we're going to lose our house. And he didn't. Dave ended up getting two jobs for minimum wage, because the world in California was just not looking for a 57-year-old computer scientist. And Dave and I, some things started to happen, and Dave and I say that we learned different things. And today I don't call these problems. I call these opportunities to grow, because we learned different lessons from that. I am a person who has always been addicted to approval. What are they going to think of me? My mother used to say, oh, honey, if anything goes on, you just put a smile on your face. What would the neighbors think? And you just go out there. And I was just always worried about what you were going to think. Now, here we are, and it looks like we're going to have a house foreclosure, and we've got attorneys swarming all over the place. Because of that, we're going to have to file bankruptcy. And all this stuff is happening, and no job on the horizon. And all that stuff came to pass. And I was devastated. I was so devastated. And I loved, I can't remember who said it, whether it was Blanche or Franny or Matt or who, said, but whatever I judge, I'm going to get to do. And you see, when I would see these things happening to people, I would say, well, they just need to get a job. If they would just get a job, everything would be okay. And I watched what my husband did to try to get a job. Must have been 300 resumes sent out. And what I got to do is I got to walk in those shoes. And I got to learn about that. And the only thing that I lost through that whole thing was just a boatload of pride. That was all. Because, you see, you got to watch me lose my house. You got to watch me and my husband file bankruptcy. And all of that stuff came to pass. But what you got to watch me do in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous was not drink and not go crazy and go to meetings. And because of that, I learned a lot. You know what I have left? I have, Peggy sat there and she said today, as people were coming by, she said, you are so loved. I am the richest woman in Alcoholics Anonymous. I am so loved. And you know what's really the gift? Is that I can feel that.
And when I came here 22 years ago, I couldn't feel that. And I am so loved. And that's a great event that's come to pass. Because you see, the other stuff is just stuff. It's just stuff. And when it all boils down, Bob said, it all amounts to love and service. And I have it. In spades. In spades. So rich. I'm so grateful for the marriage that I have today. And I can tell you that Dave and I had no way to have a marriage. None of us, neither one of us. We both knew how to get a hostage, but neither one of us knew how to have a marriage. I am Dave's fourth wife. So Dave knows how to marry, and I know how to stay married. Get a hero. We've been talking about heroes all weekend. Get a hero. Find somebody who's working this program and watch what they do. And I had some heroes in this program. And Dave and I watched what they did. And we took their advice. If you're going to ask somebody for some advice, if you're going to ask them, it probably would suit you to take it, to take the action. Frank told me, you don't divorce no matter what. And I love what my baby Donna says. And those of you who've got to hear Donna East, she says that Phyllis taught her that sometimes you just do time. You just do time. And so Dave and I don't divorce no matter what. It's just like drinking. You don't drink no matter what. You don't divorce no matter what. We're going to deal with this no matter what. And that was the first advice I got. The other advice I got was treat each other like a newcomer. How do we treat each other? With love, tolerance, and patience. That's how we treat a newcomer. And then we were told, why don't you pick up the traditions and work them in your relationship? That'll teach you how to live with another person. And I'm glad we watched these heroes because, you see, Matt, we're two alcoholics hooked up together, and I'm all I think about, and Dave's all he thinks about. So we have to work on thinking about the other person. I have a spiritual illness, and I only know one way to heal a spiritual malady, and that is to reach out and help another alcoholic. And that's what you taught me to do when I came. And if I would continue to reach out, then I would get from this program all the things that I ever dreamed I could have. Because the magic is one alcoholic reaching out to another alcoholic. I have those two boys, and I just want to really quickly tell you about my two sons. And before I meant to say this right at the beginning of my talk, but I need to thank everybody who's here, but I have to leave as soon as I finish speaking because I have an airplane to catch, and we're really, really tight. And I'd also like to thank Trish because Trish is going to drive me to Orlando to catch that airplane. And But I just want to thank you all and let you know how much I've enjoyed it. But I need to leave before it just as soon as I finish speaking, so thank you so much. I want to tell you about my two sons. When I was 6.5 years sober, my youngest son called me on the phone and he said, Mom, I want what you have. And 6.5 years before, I was supposed to attend a function at his school. And he said, don't you dare show up at my school because I am ashamed of you. And 6.5 years later, he wants what I have. That's a great event that's come to pass. My son celebrated 15 years of sobriety in this program on January the 3rd, 1999. He's married to a lady named Kelly, and Kelly celebrated 10 years of sobriety on July the 7th. That's a great event that's come to pass.
I have another son, and Blanche made it very clear what Al-Anon is, and Al-Anon is people who love an alcoholic who go to meetings. So Russ is not an Al-Anon, but he ought to be. And it's amazing, or he could be. Let me put it that way, he could be. But Russ has begun to find a spiritual path that I knew nothing about. And this is working for him. And my son Russ tried to take his life many times. And I thought I would die in this program sober, watching my son do the things he did to himself. But you know, when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. And I was doing something just like I'm doing this morning, except it was on a Saturday morning, and it was 10 years ago. And my daughter-in-law had called me up on the phone on Friday night, and she said that my son was in the hospital one more time. He had put a pair of scissors in his stomach. Now, I knew about depression, and I know about that kind of desperation. Because, you see, Russ was someone who would cut on himself, and I knew about that because I had done that too. You know, I just couldn't stand emotional pain, so I would do anything. I could take the physical pain better than the emotional pain. So I understood his desperation. And I'm here to tell you, it wasn't until my son that I truly understood what the big book talked about when it says our dilemma was a lack of power. I was absolutely powerless to help my child. I was absolutely powerless to help my alcoholic, drug-addicted child. I was so powerless. And she called me and told me that, and the next morning I got up and I was just torn down. I was devastated. And this man walked up to me after the meeting was over, and he said, "Young lady, you and I need to talk." And he said, "We need to get into the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we need to read the chapter to the agnostic. And you need to know that God either is or he isn't. He is either all things or he's nothing. And that Russ is God's kid. And what God does with his kids is none of your business." And that day I was able to release my son. And my son hasn't tried to hurt himself in 9 years. And that's a great event that's come to pass. And Russ and Cheryl have these two little girls, Katie and Jessie. Jessie's only a year old, but Katie's almost three. And every time Katie sees me, she's got those arms up and she's going, "Grandma, Grandma, Grandma." She's just learned to say it. She used to couldn't say it. And that's a great event that's come to pass. And I'm here to tell you folks, I am a dynamite grandma. Thanks to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. On May the 23rd, 1993, we had a miracle. And it's our first grandchild. And his name is Ryan David Klinger Lee. And I thought the heavens had opened and this child was born. And he had this blonde curly hair. And I just thought he was the cutest thing that God ever put on the face of the earth. And when he was 18 months old, we found out that he was profoundly deaf. And I'm telling you, I had my fist at God. How can this be happening to us? But you see, one more time, my perception of reality was distorted. I had no idea what God was about to give us. But you see, because of his deafness, a lot of wonderful things have happened. One of the things is that I can sign. And I've been able to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to a lot of people who are deaf. And I knew nothing about the deaf community. This little boy is an instrument in our family, because I can guarantee you there's not one day that goes by that he thinks that there's anything wrong with him. The miracle. And it's those parents that you taught in Alcoholics Anonymous. They are the very best parents I have ever seen. Please keep this program the way it is, because I want this program to be here for Ryan, because I think he's going to need you.
And I have two more grandchildren. Let me quickly tell you, I have five. And but I think Ryan's the one's going to need you. And I want this program. I don't want anybody screwing with it. I want it just like it was when I got here. Because I think Ryan's going to need you. And I want to tell you a quick story, and I'll sit down. And that is that my grandson, Ryan, we needed to find out the degree of his deafness. And they put him to sleep, and nothing happened. They put him to sleep again, and nothing happened. The third time, he finally went out, and he came to doing this. And that's more in sign language. So, I'm the best Polly I've ever been. You have absolutely breathed life into me. A great event. I'm married to one man for the past 19 years, and I have loved that one man with all my heart, and I never could do that. And that's a great event that's come to pass. I have a relationship with my sons today, and they say, Mom, you're the mom we always wanted you to be. And that's a great event that's come to pass. And I never, ever felt like I could ever make it as a mom. But thanks to this program, and I am absolutely a dynamite grandma. And I thank you so much, because what you did without me knowing it is that you fulfilled all my dreams. And I talked to my son James yesterday morning, and my son James lives in Chicago. And James says, Mom, you tell all those people in Daytona Beach that your son James loves you. And that's a great event that's come to pass. God bless you. I love you too.